Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster, the industry's leading sports technology provider and coach education platform. Check out all of their products and education articles at Simply Faster. That's SimpliFaster.com. You can find all kinds of great products there, great articles, a lot of good coaches putting out some good stuff there, so check out their stuff. Today, I get the honor of sitting down with strength coach, entrepreneur, and owner of Body Creation, Sports Performance, and Fitness, Andy McCloy.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach, Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on and the takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
My man, Andy McCloy. What's going on, my man? Welcome to the show.
Man, before we get started, I think I need to acknowledge that is hands down the best intro music. I've been on a lot of podcasts, man. That's pretty daggone good.
Look, man, yeah. I've been on podcasts where I was like, man, just because of this intro music, I don't even know if I'm going to listen to
right.
this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, man.
Trying to connect with some guy and trying to be real. You know, like you and I know, like I'm a hip-hop fan. You're a hip-hop fan. Like, I want to connect with people that connect with me.
Yeah, man.
So, man, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have Andy on. Andy's an OG in this industry, man. We've got some history. We've known each other for about 2.5 years. He's right in my back porch, man. He's got some history with where I work at Madison Academy. We're going to go through that. But first off, Andy, man, let my audience know who you are, you know, how you got to where you are today and how you got in this industry and what you're doing today.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate that. Sure. I need to put that out there too. But I've been in business for 21 years as of this year. I was virtually unemployable at the age of about 20, but I knew I wanted to get into the sport performance field but more so general fitness in the beginning. First couple years I was in business, first 4 years, I developed kind of a franchise prototype in general fitness gyms, and I had exclusivity contracts at multiple gyms. That became very unfulfilling for me, and I figured with my background, I was better suited for mentorship and working with athletes. So about, I guess, 2004, I pivoted and went all in on athletes, and I figured I needed to learn how to be a really good coach if I was going to do that. There's a different level of focus in education that way, as opposed to the general fitness market. So I went all in. Concurrently running my business, I also became the strength coach at Madison Academy High School, where you're at. Yep. I was their strength coach for 11 years. I worked with them very differently than you do now. Man, you got the beautiful weight room and the toys.
I'm spoiled, man.
You are, dude. When I first got over there, we had one Nautilus machine in the middle of a weight room, and I had to negotiate and broker a deal with the old Gold's Gym that was going out of town to get a bunch of equipment. And a different world. But, I did that for a long time. When Eric Koyu left, that was kind of my last year there, and I decided to open this place. And I guess that was about 8 years ago now. And here we are. You know, we work with athletes from 7 years old all the way up. We've got a long-term athletic development program for kids that age. We've got a program specifically for middle school kids in a certain maturation window. We've got our elite program for high school kids, and we've got college and professional athletes. We service most of the NFL, NBA, Major League Basketball athletes that are from this area or around this town.
Right. Man, that's awesome. And for you guys to understand, this, it's so refreshing to have a place in town that when a kid asks for extra work, it's a no hesitation. It's go to BCI. You know, that's what's great about this. And it's funny, I want to talk about who Andy is, because this speaks volumes about who Andy is. I remember the moment I met Andy. I was on the sideline of an MA football game in 2019. That was my first season. And I was standing there, you know, kind of minding my own business, and I look over and there's this buff dude who's kind of short that's decked out in his Jordans and his backwards hat, you know, and he's either got on a BCI shirt, a white tee, or a black tee. There ain't no in between.
Ain't that the truth?
And And when I got the job at MA, the first thing people throw out was, you know, this place got established with training with our athletes with Andy McCloy. You should reach out. And I hate to admit this, but as being a young coach and hearing about a private sector guy, my first initiation and assumptions kill you, that, oh my gosh, a private sector guy. This is the dude that sells foot ladders. This is the dude that, you know, is trying to steal money. I already had that assumption in my head. And when you introduced yourself, the first thing in my head was, oh, this guy, he's got tattoos down his arms. He's definitely that guy. He's screaming it until we started talking. And one thing I noticed about you, Andy, was you were asking questions about me, and I just saw how intently you listened. And I was like, okay. Usually dudes that want to sell something don't know how to shut up. Mm-hmm. But this dude sat and listened, and I was like, okay. And he goes, the first thing you said was, you're welcome in my doors anytime. And then you followed through on that. I've walked in this door, trained here a few times, made relationships with your staff, and it's been nothing but hospitality. So I just appreciate that the way you carry yourself speaks volumes, you know, and I'm sure that that's carried over with your relationships and your business as far as, you know, with parents and coaches in high schools and such. Am I wrong?
No, man. First of all, I appreciate that. And I think that is something that I really try to do. I try to connect with people. I believe in serving before selling, you know, so that's important to me, and having a good relationship with the coaches in our community, the parents. Like, I think that's something that people in the private sector should do more of. I think we rightfully so get a bad rap. I think that there are less guys out here doing it the right way than there are guys out here that are, you know, stealing money and selling footy ladders. you know, so it's a rightful stereotype.
Right.
And anything I can do to kind of right that wrong and be an example of the way it should be done, that's important to me.
Awesome. You know, the biggest topic I wanted us to dive down was the relationship between the training that high school athletes get at their school. And because, you know, the way that our setup is that most high schools don't have a designated strength coach like I am.
Right.
Mostly it's their sport coach, their football coach, their basketball coach. Well, if a basketball coach is running the weight room, that's a big deal because hoopers don't lift in high school, you know, baseball, whatever it is, like they're, you know, they're training their guys and they take a lot of pride in it if they decide to invest in it. And then anything outside, they're like, you're taking away from the team. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot of private sector coaches also get really disgruntled over like, man, we put in all this work here and now you're going back to your team and it's ruining, you know, the philosophies are wrong. And, you know, how in the world are we going to battle this? Because like this is where I feel like the battle must begin on the ground floor at the high school level. Because look, there's not going to be full-time strength coaches in every high school anytime soon. That's just the truth. Yep. Now, is that the goal? Absolutely. I hope so. But how do we equip these coaches and how do we establish relationships to be able to help this problem? Because it's a major issue.
Well, I think one, you know, conversations like this are really important to be had. I think the more conversations like this between strength coaches in the high school market and guys in the private sector, the more we do that, the more we work together, that's in everybody's best interest. That's a win-win. I think specifically from my seat, one of the things that people in the private market have to accept is that you are the supplement, you are not the show. And that is a problem. In a Instagram world, people in my world are often trying to use their athletes and all of their marketing. So they want to put up impressive things, big, heavy deadlifts, you know, really fancy plyometrics and all those things. And I got to be honest with you, I'm not so sure that's your role. Now, it's contextual. Okay.
Right.
We don't worry about heavy loading strategies because I know like some of our guys are working with you and there's other strength coaches like Garrett Keith that, you know, I can trust that those kids are getting that type of work in there. So why would we repeat that? The only reason I would say that some people do that type of work is because they want to make it look fancy on Instagram.
Right.
And that's where the battle begins. So I think, you know, philosophically, people that are in the private market have to accept that you're not the show, man. You are a supplement to what those guys do at high school, and you should probably build your program around that. There's a lot of gaps you can fill due to logistics and time constraints, like we've talked about before. There's a lot of things I know you would like to do with your athletes that you simply just don't have the time to do. Well, that's where our program can help fill those gaps. And I think that's, again, in the best interest of everybody, the high school strength coach, the athlete, and us.
Yeah, 100%. I had a conversation with an athlete this morning. One of our girls' basketball players that's got a few D1 offers. She's going to be over here this afternoon, but here's the deal. Look at her schedule. She had off-season lift with her team this morning at 6:30. She's got volleyball tryouts after school, and then she's coming to BCI to train. that could easily get wrecked really fast. 100%. One thing that we pride ourselves is just being able to communicate across the board to help us see the whole. Like, all right, what are we doing in class? What are you doing with the strength coach? All right, what does tryouts even look like with volleyball? You know, are you thrashed? Is your output levels done? Is your CNS absolutely wrecked? And it's funny, Libby looked at me and was like, you know, it's going to be a tough week. She's a hard-nosed kid. Like, she's never going to back down from anything. Uh-huh. But she looked at me and said, like, it's going to be good. Like, I'm going to BCI this afternoon too. And I was like, okay, good. And she was like, yeah, you know, BCI understands. Like, we're going to do some recovery strategies and some soft tissue work and some stuff that's going to help me get to the next thing. And I was like, you know, we don't even have to have that conversation anymore. It takes one phone call. Hey, give me some context on what you're doing. Here's a 10-minute phone call. And boom, we've got a whole system working, and we're not that connected. One 10-minute phone call can be powerful.
Yeah.
And I think some coaches are so scared to pick up the phone. Hmm. You know, like, if you want to find out and help your kids, pick up the phone and call somebody or go establish a relationship and come in with value and listening first. Yep. You know, like, I've seen a lot of coaches on social media go like, hey, how do I deal with this trainer guy that's doing all this, and I'm noticing our kids are getting wrecked and so on and so forth. And my answer is always, have you talked to the guy?
Yeah.
Like, do you know his name? What is he doing? What's his purpose? Get to know him a little bit so that we can further these kids' athletic abilities and not wreck them. Because one thing that's true is that we're not avoiding the AAU circuit anymore. You're not avoiding the travel ball circuit. You're not avoiding the 7-on-7 game. It's here. It's here to stay. It's a big profit market. It's a showcase and visibility. You're not getting around it, right? So how do we work with our kids and show that, you know what, I want to promote these things, mm-hmm. but do it in the right way?
Well, I think one thing to address is that ego is the enemy. That is the problem. If there's a coach in the private sector or the high school sector that doesn't want to reach out to the other, I think you got to face that you got an ego problem, you know?
Right.
And if that hurts anybody's feelings, I'm sorry, but it's the truth. I think sometimes we like to be the guy sitting on the hill, you know, we're the man.
Right.
And then when we have to go communicate with somebody else, it threatens that authority, you know, the legend in our own mind that we are. But I think that's really important, man. Even if you are quite confident that the person you're going to be communicating with is not aware of the principles of strength and conditioning the way you are, I still think it's important to reach out to that person and have a conversation. You know, that to me, I see is the biggest issue is a lack of a desire to communicate. Now, I'll be honest, in this market, which I know really well, the guys who are qualified strength coaches, they don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
It's a lot harder with the defensive line coach who is, you know, kind of filling in as a strength coach.
Right.
I would suspect it's because he knows that there is a knowledge deficit that he's operating from. So it challenges him. Okay. And if we flip that scenario around, if there are private market coaches that you're not having conversations with, they probably understand that they have the knowledge deficit, right?
Right.
The only way we fix that is through communication. That is the only way that we can do it. Ego is the enemy, and we've got to continue to address that on both sides.
Right. Speaking of that, we touched on this in my last episode with, he's a D3 strength coach up in New York, but communication is so key, and hearing what they mean, not what they say. So, for example, football coach may ask you and say, this kid needs to get stronger. And we go, are you sure he pulls 2.5 times his body weight? No, but all right, now what is he actually saying? Can we ask better questions to go, okay, where in the game, what do you mean? Show me. In the game, maybe he's weak at the point of attack. Yeah. Maybe he can't move his hips well enough to be able to leverage himself to execute a skill that's going to help him make a play.
Uh-huh.
All right. Do you think that we're lacking a listening skill there to be able to actually hear what we need to hear and listen rather than just, oh, you said stronger, and then get pissed off and go, no, I did my job. No, do yours. You know, that doesn't help anything.
I totally agree with you. And communication, in my opinion, starts with listening. And you do have to listen to be able to read between the lines, because head coaches say things that don't make sense to guys like us.
Right.
So if you you have to read between the lines. But if you get offended because a head coach says this guy needs to be stronger, and you already know he's strong enough, you've got some metrics to quantify that statement, that's your ego coming into play again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think being humble, listening, being able to read between the lines, advocating for the truth of what you believe in is incredibly important. And that goes, again, not just with your head coach, but it also goes with the private market. You know, being able to have hard conversations during times like what Libby's experiencing right now is important, because I don't think every private market facility understands how to kind of go off the script mm-hmm. and create recovery or facilitative programs.
Right.
Luckily, we know how to do that, but not every place does. So if you have an athlete like Lily who's attending a place like ours, it's probably in your best interest to reach out to that person and communicate with them and ask a lot of questions, open-ended questions, to where you can get some insight into what they're going to be doing with your athlete.
Right.
And if you've got a good rapport, here's what I tell you. I would never have an issue with you, Garrett, anybody that I trust and respect, saying, hey, Andy, I'd like to reflect this back to you. This is what's going on. It would make me feel more comfortable if we could figure out a way to look at her program through this lens. I would have absolutely no issue with that. I may not roll it out exactly the way you want me to do it, but we'd be on the same page about the principles behind the approach.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's when I mentioned refreshing earlier, I know for a fact you guys have systems in place to where you are, you know, you're rigid in your principles, but your flexibility in your vehicle of getting there. Mm-hmm. And you guys are, your flow and how you manage things helps be able to do, you know, you have a couple of feeler evaluation assessments, mostly with just our eyes and ears, just mm-hmm. conversations and listening and watching kids move. And then you have a place and you can mailbox these kids. Okay, this is where we're at. And you can manage that. Not a lot of places have that capability. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of one-trick ponies out there.
I don't think they're interested in it. Again,
really?
And I think it comes back to that.
The ego thing?
Yeah. It's they don't want to be the supplement. They want to be the show. Right?
So do they think that if they're the supplement, they can't profit? That they're not going to make money?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if profit comes into play. It's more of like an authority thing. I want to be the man in the eyes of these athletes, and I want to be the man in the community. I want people to think I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, I'm just a man helping these kids.
Right,
and,
right.
There's good ways to do it, and I think there's non-optimal ways. And the more that ego is not in check, the more likely we're going to end up with the non-optimal strategies.
Right. An often thing that I get DMs about on social media is high school coaches that are filling this role, uh-huh. but their growth mindset, their learning. Like, I've always advocated for this in the past 2 years or so, because I used to be that guy that that listed every letter after my name as a flex. I'm not gonna cap.
I feel
all right. That's me. But I stopped after somebody made fun of me and like listed like 26 letters behind my name. Oh, Mr. Big Shot, and I was like, okay, I need to back off a little bit. That's silly.
Yeah.
But because there's a lot of guys with letters behind their name that can't coach themselves out of a wet paper sack.
That's exactly right.
And then there's some. I know some sport coaches that have just dedicated themselves to learning and adapting, and they've got. They have a lab in front of them. They've got a team they get to work with. Coaches put them in charge of the weight room, and they're doing an excellent job, but they just don't quite have the grasp. So they ask questions, right? And one of the hardest questions they ask me is, man, my head coach just don't get it. You know, my head coach just doesn't get it as far as what they experienced and how they saw success. Because here's the thing that's tough for me is when a high school program or college program at that, or whoever sees success, but they don't have systems in place, or they don't have evaluation system that goes, okay, we won. Let's break down why we won. Uh-huh. Did we win in spite of our strategy on the preparation side?
Mm-hmm.
But everybody thinks it's because of.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? So like, how do we approach people with that type of, and I know that this is very relative because it depends on the person, and you'd probably throw out some relationship strategies mm-hmm. that you've already done of how to break the ice with those that are on that really, you know, fixed mindset.
Yeah. I think confirmation bias and cognitive dissonance is something that we all should be thinking a lot about. And when you were talking, I was thinking about a conversation I had the other day about survivorship bias. And I made a post about this actually in our Facebook group that'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what we do is we look at the success of others, and confirmation bias kicks in. It's like, well, because they did that, that's why they were successful. But when failure is hidden, success and failure look the same. So what nobody talks about is the thousands or hundreds of other teams that maybe took the same strategy as that winning program, but failed miserably and had a very high injury rate. Right. So I think as a whole, we have to take personal responsibility for our biases. Again, that is a very hard thing to do in our industry because we kind of live in silos. Like, especially if you're like on somebody's coaching tree, like you've been introduced to like one paradigm and one view of how we apply this stuff. And that can really limit your ability to apply it, communicate with coaches, and get on the same page.
Yeah.
Head coaches, I think strength coaches and head coaches struggle to get on the same page at every level. So this is not a new problem.
Right.
Something we all have a lot of awareness of. So I think your ability to communicate what you believe in, your ability to listen, to read between the lines that we talked about before, those things are incredibly important. And then the part that I would tell strength coaches, like, you've got to advocate for what's best for the kids. I know you work for the head coach. Like, you have to roll out what he wants to roll out. But for God's sake, man, you got to make sure you're advocating for what's best. You're the one with the expertise and the knowledge of human performance, not the head coach.
Right. And I guess if a head coach is really good at leading their team and leading a staff, because that's – you want to talk about – I mean, I don't think that being a head coach is any different than being a CEO or an owner of a business if you look at it. There's a lot of parallels. Now, I'm not fully in the business world. I don't know it as well. You know, but I see – how high-level coaches do it, and they're always looking on ways to get better and improve. So, they're gonna attract coaches that will stand their ground for what they believe in, because there's too many yes men in this industry, right? 100%. They're gonna jump at the trendy thing and be scared to death to stand on their two feet because somebody might fight back. Uh-huh. Are you equipped to hold your ground because you actually believe in it, or do you only make that statement because you saw so-and-so at D1 so-and-so say it? Uh-huh. So they must be right, right? Not because they actually have a reason behind it, because that's who they are and the logo they wear, they must be right. Funny story, for those, I haven't really told this story on this podcast yet, but like when I went from being an intern at Mississippi State, where we did like no Olympic lifting, all like trap bar deadlift, squat, a lot of machine work, hip pressing, stuff like that. And then I became a GA at West Alabama, where you have a rack, a rusty barbell, and some crusty bumpers. You got no bands and no dumbbells, buddy. What you gonna do? And our head strength coach said, we're going to spend the little money we have on an Olympic bar, and we're going to be fully Olympic based. And I was like, no. Nuh-uh. Why aren't we doing that? Mississippi State doesn't do it. And my head coach said, hold your brakes, youngin. Let me teach you on how we got to do things here based off the resources that we have, right? So that's another question. Is, you know, we talked about aligning in principles, and that you don't have to do it a certain way. Like, I see you guys post here at BCI. You guys have got dabbled a little bit back into teaching Olympic lifting because it gets such butchered at their high schools. You thought you can add some value there.
Exactly. And we're not doing it to create an adaptation of strength speed. We're doing it to make sure that the kids that you get or other strength coaches get actually know how to clean.
Yep.
Because we have had kids that come in here and we do what we call an intake interview before somebody signs up. You know, we talk to them about their goals and needs, and we get it like a blueprint on how competent they are in the weight room and what they've been exposed to.
Right.
And we kind of further explore that in our evaluation and orientation process, and then we plug them in. Well, what we noticed, and we had removed Olympic lifting for a long time because kids were doing it at school.
Mm-hmm.
But we started noticing kids would be like, yeah, I clean 300. And you'd be like, yo, this kid told me he cleans 300 pounds. And
300 is going to break this kid.
I was like, I don't believe it. Like, what does that look like? You know, and then there was a couple instances where we saw kids cleaning either at their school because they had videos, put it on social media, or we asked the kid, hey, man, let's warm up and see what your clean technique looks like. And it would, you know, it was not a clean. Let's just say that.
Right.
So we were like, all right, how can we help these kids, right, but also not compete with what their coach is trying to create?
Right.
So by building in a couple sets of technique-based work to help, like, really clean that up, it's been really valuable. We've had a lot of kids come back to us and be like, man, I'm so glad you guys taught me this. My cleaning numbers are going through the roof now because they've actually been taught how to clean. On the flip side of that, when we get a kid that comes from you guys or Garrett or somebody that actually knows how to clean, it's a huge advantage for us because now we've got somebody in the weight room. We can be like, hey, guys, look, this is what it should look like.
Right.
Okay, this is the standard. Right. You need to bring your technique up to hear and focus on bar speed and intent and those things. Right. So I think it works both ways. When we get somebody that knows what they're doing, we can use them as a teaching tool or a guide. And if somebody has absolutely no idea what to do, we can help bulletproof that kid and improve his experience in that strength coach's weight room.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions popping into my head that I want you to cover. One, the first one I want you to cover is go through, because I've got some private sector coaches, I'm sure, that act as high school strength coaches and small school strength coaches that are connected through the private sector.
Yep.
Talk me through your guys' you mentioned your intake process and how a lot of times I've heard a lot of good practitioners, whether it be coaches, chiropractors, doctors, talk about that the history that you take in the interview and intake process is vital to getting context and where you go from there. And then how you guys manage your, let's just use your high school group as an example, because I know you guys have multiple different categories there, but how you guys set up your training from intake to, all right, now we're managing it on the floor. Because I think a lot of coaches struggle, whether it's with a team or it's with in the private sector, of managing the room effectively and putting something in place to where now, because a lot of coaches aren't coaching, they're managing.
Yep.
They're herding sheep. Yep. So I want to hear BCI's process of intake and then how you guys manage the high school program that you guys run so well here.
Yeah. So it starts with that intake interview, which this is an opportunity for me to get to know you, get to know your family, get to know the reasons why you're actually here. We start to peel the onion back about like what's important to you. We also cover like, what do you think you need and why? Now, I'll be honest with you. I could probably write down the responses because they're the same with almost every kid. I need to get bigger. I need to get faster. I need to get stronger. And every now and then it's like, I need to work on my first step quickness or agility. So I got to be honest with you. That doesn't mean a whole lot to me, you know, coming from a teenage kid or his dad. But it's information.
You got to hear through the lines, like we talked about earlier, like we did with coaches. You got to hear, what does dad really mean?
Yep.
Other than what he's saying, like we got to get quicker foot speed.
Yeah.
And what the hell are you talking about?
And what I'll attempt to do is reflect that as I gather that information. The next thing I do is I address how our program will fix those things.
Gotcha.
And I take them through what we call our wheel of conditioning, where these are all the biomotor abilities that we're working to address. And I go into context about how we work with the high school programs, what gaps we're filling, and how we would address things like speed, change of direction, flexibility, mobility, stability, energy system conditioning. We also talk about the role of SPP. Now, we talk about it a little bit different than like a classical strength coach would. We talk about it in the context of like specialized physical preparedness is the technical and tactical stuff you're doing with, like, say, your pitching coach, or your hitting coach.
Right.
Now, I know a traditional S&C coach may have issue with how I'm using that language, but I can defend that all day if anybody wants to talk
about it.
Because it's incredibly important to have that conversation, because we're stress managers. And every kid now is going to a hitting coach, a pitching coach, a dribbling coach, a shooting coach, a wide receiver coach. And it's important to talk about how to utilize those things. So we talk about, when we get there, a general to specific continuum, and how at the end of your year, your focus should really be like general physical qualities. So we want to set you up for a win there. So at the end of your season, you should be seeing us 3 to 4 times a week, because this is the time to prioritize your body. And maybe the SPP stuff is one day a week or maybe two. But then as we get closer to the season, that relationship changes. Right. We actually want you to come see us less and ramp those things up more. And there's a way that we sell annual contracts primarily.
Mm-hmm.
We do that like from integrity, man. It's what I believe is best for those kids. And we give them the autonomy to move their days up and down based on that model that we laid out. Mm-hmm. And we're in communication with them about it. Well, after that meeting, they then get scheduled for their orientation and their evaluation. So they end up on Coach Chris's books. He puts them through a modified version of the FMS. We don't use the whole test.
Right.
We're just looking for like red flags, trying to get an idea of movement competency. And then we do some table tests. We look at shoulder IR, hip IR, ability to go overhead, infrasternal angle, just to get a really good profile on this guy. After that, he puts them through our big 5 exercises, just again, to get an idea of like, where am I going to start this kid?
Mm-hmm.
And based on that information, then in that session, which we allot over an hour for, they get their workout card. The coach who's doing the evaluation is deciding which one of our templates are we starting them on, a level 1, a level 2, a level 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go deeper into that, but I'll keep it there. And then from there, what they do is, based on what that coach saw, he decides, is this kid going to use our baseline, our regression, or our progression? So even inside each of these different levels of templates, there's baselines, regressions, and progressions.
Gotcha.
We teach the kid how to write his card. We explained to him what he's going to be doing with his set and reps over the first four-week block. We rotate back and forth between intensification blocks and accumulation blocks. Now, mind you, when I say those words, people might think that that would be a competing issue with what you guys do at school. My argument to that, or how I explain this to people, is that we use a minimal effective dose. Mm-hmm. Very rarely are kids ever going to do anything over three sets here. You know, right. It's maybe four, maybe five here and there, especially if we have a little bit more insight into what he's doing at school. But we take a very minimal effective dose approach. After they go through all that, the coach talks about how he's going to be integrated into a group, what his responsibilities will be. So that way on day one, when he shows up, he's ready to rock and roll. What we have done is we took the alliteration that my good friend Mike Robertson created, his R7 model. We made it R6. So there are six R's that each kid goes through when they're in our program.
Okay.
Release, reset, ramp, reactive, resistance, and recovery and regen. So when they show up for session one, it starts there. They're going to do some foam rolling, soft tissue work, move their body around. Mm-hmm. This is kind of where we're having conversations about what they did today. How are you feeling?
Yep.
And we're taking in all that information. We used to have a pretty fancy daily readiness assessment that we punted because we found that kids were kind of just like comparing answers. And it wasn't as helpful as I had hoped it would be.
Right.
After that, we go into some resets. This is where whatever red flags we may have identified in the evaluation process, and I hate using this word these days, but we put together a corrective strategy.
Sure.
So during that, they'll either do some basic breathing drills that we do, very PRI-driven concepts to mm-hmm. align the thorax and the pelvis, but also any individual correctives that we've identified would be important for that athlete, that's when they do them. After that, we go into a RAMP, range of motion activation movement preparation. Everybody listening to this probably knows that acronym.
Right.
But it's our warm-up, and it's designed to mobilize mobile joints, stabilize stable joints, and move them around. And then we go into R4, which is reactive. So this is where we're getting into, like, you know, your traditional, like, track skips, light bounding series. But mm-hmm. it's also where we get into our sprints, our throws, and our jumps. After that, they then go into a rack and they begin R5, which is resistance. We do total body training programs. We've got A days and B days, so there's a little bit different focus per okay. day. And then at the end of each session, this is what way we explain it to people is R6 now is the ball's back in your court. It's time for you to go home, get a good meal in, get a good sleep in. And we do some like diaphragmic breathing stuff before they leave just mm-hmm. to help kind of switch them parasympathetically. But it's more of like, hey, let's calm down before you run out. You know, run out the door.
Right.
Let's get focused on what we need to do now to make sure you actually get the most out of that training session.
Right.
Our model is set up at around 12 athletes per group. We can go up to about 20, but our model is set up around 12. Generally, I have one coach on the floor and one to two interns on the floor at the entire time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is incredible about our team, and this is a standard that we set, you know, years ago that has held, and it's one of the more impressive things about the quality of men that I'm able to work with, is that if you aren't coaching a session, but you're in that weight room, your job is to help. And help is keep your eyes open.
Right.
Look around the weight room. Because even with that ratio of like two interns and a coach, if I got 12 to 16 athletes, man, if he's got his back turned, he's missing stuff.
Yep.
So to maintain a high, you know, standard of quality, we like our coaches, if you're in that weight room, your eyes are on the floor. If you need a break and you don't want to be in there, cool, man, go walk the parking lot, sit in the lobby, do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. But if you're in that weight room, your job is to help.
Right.
So we've got a high degree of accountability. You know, I always believe we could improve our ability on like exercise execution, like coaching it up, making sure it's done right. And that's so important in the private market, man. It's so important that you have a high standard of exercise execution. That's really important.
Right.
So I don't know if I answered the entire question there, but that's kind of like from, you know, the intake interview process to getting on the floor and some of the logistics associated with it.
Yeah, that's a really good insight of how you guys do it. And if you're in the private sector, that's something you can sit on and hear how they do things here. Doesn't mean that's maybe how you guys need to do it, but it's one thing you can hear and marinate on a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I want you guys to hear from my side of how it fits from my school side. Because here's the deal on my side, because of our schedule, I get our kids, depending on what we have, either two times a week. And if we happen to catch a kid in an off-season mode, which is where they're not actively playing a sport, which is not very often, mm-hmm. four times. And I mean, our sessions aren't that long. You know, I'm a very big rocks type of guy. Like and you see most strength conditioning programs in high school. I mean, I'm going to be honest, you're going to hear in 70% of high schools, it's bench squat clean.
period.
And that's it. 35 minutes, 50-minute classes, dress in, dress out, bench, squat, clean, get out.
Yep.
And that's not enough for these kids. But at the high school level, you got to do what's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. So understand that it can fit if you send your kids to the right place. I really believe it. And if you're a high school coach listening now, I really challenge you to seek out in your community and try to find where your kids can best fit, especially if they're looking for it, right? Because most parents, from what I can see, and I know my parents were this way, is that you see a kid that loves these sports and wants to be good at it, and it makes them happy. They want to provide every opportunity to max out their potential. And it's all coming from good intentions. And sometimes they fall into these traps based off of clever marketing strategies, right, from these guys. So,
and confirmation bias. Like,
sure.
I'll throw one example out that parents fall victim to a lot. It's the ex-athlete deal. There are a lot of ex-athletes that played big-time ball who absolutely know what they're doing. Okay,
right,
there
right,
are.
Right.
But that's not all of them.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of guys that if they played big-time ball, they look the part, they're good communicators, they're persuasive. A parent's confirmation bias will kick in and be like, that guy's been where I want my kid to go. Surely he knows how to help my kid get there. And then that situation can be a nightmare for somebody in your situation.
Yeah.
Because now you got a kid doing a whole bunch of things that are conflicting with what you're doing, and it can be a big problem.
Let me ask you this. Do you have, if you had to ask, like if you were a parent or you were a high school coach that was still learning about this stuff,
yep,
and you were seeking out a place like this, do you have any questions you would ask that would throw up a red flag and go, maybe that's...
Like if I was a parent?
Right. If you're going to ask a sports performance coach or a private sector coach, I need to ask good questions to put my feelers out of, is this a good place to invest?
Yeah.
Is there some, I've heard some people say this and talk about that there, you may hear an answer like, I'm going to leave this open to you. Like maybe if the way they answer will tell you, will give you a decent idea of, okay, this is good, we can take the next step forward, or let me take a step back and dig a little deeper.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the more important questions to ask if you've got a high school age athlete is, explain to me how this program works with what they're doing at school. I think that is a question parents should ask. And I'll be honest with you, I'm blown away the amount of times parents do not ask that question.
Wow.
That's why we bring it up. We bring it up how we actually work with their program. You know, so I think that's a really, really important one right there. You know, I think other things would be like, do you have a training system? Okay. I think
in
the private market, a lot of guys' training system is they kind of write something up on the board and it's like, all right,
put
that's
in
what
his
we're going to do today.
We're going to put in this work, bro.
Exactly.
Come get this work. That's
Come
what I
get
hear.
This work. And, you know, listen.
That's not a bad thing. First off,
yeah,
I don't blame kids for going to find work. You know what? These kids are going to be adults one day. And that's what me and my head coach talk about. He looks at me sometimes and he's been in this thing for 30 years. He's won a state championship. He goes, at least they're there and they're not doing something they're not supposed to. And I go, you know what? That's big picture.
That's true.
You know, that's human development at that point. That
yep.
If a kid is looking to just grind and work, I don't care if it's bad or not, that's going to pay off one day.
Yeah.
But we can focus that energy because
we can guide him where into something where it's actually going to be in his long term best interest, not, you know, in his feelings. Because kids, they're emotional. We all know this, right? So if you go work at a place where there's a lot of hype and a lot of juice, which I have no issue with that.
Right.
We're not real juicy around here. Like we're, you know, more like just kind of get the job done. But kids love that, man. They love the hype and they love it. So I don't fault anybody for using it.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I think that that's an issue is when the juice outweighs the knowledge, like when it's all hype and you don't really know what you're doing. But like you said, man, there's a lot of other things these kids could be doing that, are definitely not in their best interest. So if they're working with somebody who makes them feel good, makes them work hard, I've learned to not be as critical. I may absolutely disagree with what that guy's doing. And that goes on both sides, in the private market and at the high school level. You know, I may disagree with how some uncredentialed high school strength coaches are rolling out strength training. They have a tendency, in my opinion, to load kids up a little too much. But again, there could be worse things going on. And if they're doing it with the right intent and it's just a knowledge deficit, I feel strongly that kid's still getting something good out of that.
Right. You know, you hear in my intro of this podcast of you might get your feelings hurt. And I know for a fact that you don't mind hurting people's feelings, but that's usually on them. You don't do it on purpose. I'm going to tell you the truth because that's what we're really about here is trying to give coaches strategies and give you truth to weed out the crap, like give you some strategies.
And if something I say triggers you, all I would ask you to do is like just reflect on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably because there's some evidence of that in your own world. And again, I don't think that's bad. I think that's part of all of our journey.
Okay.
There have been things I've had to, I mean, if you reflect back on how I used to run my program, all right, so if we go back 15, 16, 17 years ago, dude, we were West Side all day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't care what you did at school, really. When you came to me, we were getting after it. And, you know, I'm putting bands on, you know, 14-year-olds. They look like they're shaking and shivering. I had no idea what I was doing, man, you know. And
hey, there's a lot of stories about that field house and the work that was put in at MA.
Yeah, now we worked.
Yeah.
And I was a Looney Tune back then. Like, you want to talk about just, I was a nut. I coached people hard the way that I was coached. And I learned, man, I'm a very different person. You talk to any of those kids and they'll tell you like that he's a totally different person than he used to be. And I learned a lot about communication. I learned a lot about leadership. I learned a lot about the application of strength training principles in the private market, because the facts are this: nobody's written that book yet. Nobody's written a book on how to deal with, all right, I got a group of 12 kids. They go to 6 different high schools. They're on 6 different programs. How do I make sure I don't screw this kid up and also help him get something out of our program? So, you know, you learn a lot. I mean, I've been doing this 21 years. I think it was very important that I went deep on super training and science and practice.
Right.
And, well, it was really important for me to do that, right? But it didn't help me in the private market. If anything, it hurt me, right? The experience, though, that I developed matched up with an understanding of those principles, allowed us to create what I consider to be a pretty unique model in the private market, where we are true to strength and conditioning principles, but because we know the rules, we also know when to break them.
Right.
And that's worked really well for us.
Awesome. You know, I ask this question to all of my guests, and it's not just to hate on it, but I really want to hear your take. And I ask this one question.
Yep.
What do you hate about this industry?
I mean, it comes right back to what we talked about, ego, man. Like, I think ego is, we are in a world where guys have gigantic egos, a lot of A-type personalities. And at times I think that creates it, it makes it very hard to have authentic communication with somebody. There's a lot of posturing and those things. And I don't know, man, I'm 42 years old at this point. I just don't got time for that. You know, I want to get to know people. I want to build quality relationships. And it's just disappointing to me at times, that ego gets in the way of that. I also think that we're a little too cliquish. I think that, you know, we're on team this or team that.
Hey, the CSCCA conference is this week in Fort Worth that I'm not going to be at, but they're notorious for the flying V. You ever heard that?
No. Uh-uh.
The head strength coach in the front, and you got the two assistants, and then the two assistants.
Okay.
And they walk down the conference with their Smedium polos on.
Is that it? Huh?
And then, oh, you're, you know, it's crazy. You say that. The difference in how I was treated when I went to that conference with a West Alabama logo. Mm-hmm. Than when I did with a Division I McNeese State logo.
Totally different.
Completely different. Mm-hmm. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
And cliquish is right. I know that's so true. And it's almost like they can't help it because of the coaching tree they were brought up on, the ideologies, and then the success they may have seen. And then they think our way's the way. And then somebody else is doing it but believes in something different. You know, I hear a lot of disgruntled coaches that, especially in the conversation of like, we like Olympic lifts. We don't, right? At some point, I want to get two coaches that have those, hey, they believe in those ideologies. Now let's talk about it, you know, and the clicks are tough. And I don't know how we break it other than just getting rid of the ego. You know, that's a really tough thing. And
collectively, that's almost impossible.
Right. You know? I mean, can ego be somewhat of a good thing though?
For
like,
sure.
Can it be it can be powerful in a charismatic way. Like, in as far as having the courage to stand for what you believe in. So let's not get it twisted of like, let's become the ultimate stoic, there's probably a balance game where you still need to be real to you.
Yep.
And that's huge, is being real. And what I see from personalities of strength coaches, it's a direct reflection of like where they're at in their personal journey.
For sure.
Like, that's crazy to me.
Both as a coach and a person.
I saw you mention that in the Facebook group about how, when you fix things in your personal life and with yourself, that carries over to your professional life too. And 100%. It is 1,000% true in my life, especially in things like my marriage.
Yep.
Like raising my child. Like, I'm new to this, man. I'm a new father. I got a 2-year-old. like figuring those things out. And when those things are in harmony, man, all of a sudden my professional life seems to have gotten better.
Yeah, man. And in an industry where we celebrate being overworked and ultimately underpaid, I think it's really important to do that. Like, we are in a struggle industry for the most part. A lot of guys, they pride themselves on, you know, I get to the weight room at 4 a.m. and I leave at 8 and, you know, I work hard. And it's like, yeah. And when you're young and you don't have kids and you don't have a family, like, you should do that.
Right.
You should grind it out. But there will become a point where if all you focus on is your career, your life will become out of control. And I realized that the hard way. I got custody of my oldest daughter, who's now 24, when she was 13. Mm-hmm. I had probably been 10 years in business at that point, and I realized that my business owned me. I didn't own my business because I couldn't spend time with her. I made a hard pivot around that time and said, I'm going to figure out how to get out of my business so I don't have to be here every day. That was really important for me. I also had a lot of health issues, which a lot of strength coaches have. I had severe insomnia. I needed both my hips totally replaced.
Yeah.
I knew that in 2012. I got them totally replaced in 2018. The work that I did on fixing my health, getting custody of my daughter and setting my life up to where I could be a dad, not just a glorified babysitter, was incredibly important for my business. My business really started booming and growing. I'm going to be honest, I haven't had an issue with business growth in a very long time. So it wasn't like we had big jumps when I took care of those things. Mm-hmm. It was more, everything was functioning more efficiently. We were growing without the stress that I had previously had to endure to create growth. And I always tell people, I mentor a lot of guys in the private market on how to run a good business. And I tell them, like, there are no business problems. There's personal problems that affect your ability to run a good business.
That's powerful.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot in it. I think it shows up in, you know, the college environment, the high school environment.
It's absolutely.
Like, I know there were days, man, where I was fighting for custody of my daughter. Cause I fought for custody of my daughter first time when she was 3 and I got joint custody. But I remember going through that stuff and being out on a football field and it, like, realizing, man, I'm not a very good coach right now. Because all I could think about was the stress associated with paying my lawyer. And, you know, I had to travel to Maryland for that first custody battle. And I was just in my head about that a lot. And at 27, 28 years old, 27, I got married and then divorced very shortly after that. And I was coaching at MA at that time. And, I just remember there were days I was completely checked out. Checked out.
Wow.
It wasn't that I didn't know how to coach. It wasn't that I didn't know how to, you know. Just
you were stressed out.
Stressed
man.
Out,
Holy
man.
Cow.
You know, I had so much of my headspace was just consumed with the stress of life. I couldn't be the best coach. And I guarantee there's somebody listening to this right now that's in that spot.
Well, shoot, you're looking at him, man. Like, I've actually got my sleep study scheduled finally to get this sleep issue done in 2 weeks. So I'm finally getting to a point where I've got to get my sleep back to where it is. Because, like, I'm in a spot right now personally where, dude, if I get one training session in a week, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm like, I decided, like, no, my marriage is most important. My son's most important. When I'm home, I got stuck in a point in my life where I was, when I was at home, I was thinking about work. When I was at work, I was thinking about home.
Man,
I ain't good nowhere.
Been there.
You know? Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? Bump this. Put the phone down. If I had a dollar for every time my wife told me that, like, you put your phone down and be here, you know? And that's important. And learning how to do that. And when I started doing that, and started listening to people about listening skills, leadership skills, my ability as a coach went through the roof. Now, I'm only 27. I'm early in this thing. I've only been coaching full-time for 5 years. And, like, I feel like, man, I feel like I'm finally at least headed in the right direction. I'm no longer spinning my wheels, right? Coaches, it's not, like, get a hold of this crap early, man.
Yeah.
Andy will tell me right now, If I have a sleep issue, what are you waiting on?
Yep.
Get it done. You will thank yourself later. Don't wait until, you know, 2018 to fix health issues that you struggled with. When if there's one thing we can't get back, it's time.
And man, hindsight's always 20/20, right?
So, right.
But if you can not have to experience hindsight, you're really in control of yourself, right? And I think that's where a lot of us lose control. Is like, we're so worried about, like, mastering the craft of being a strength coach and mastering how to run a good session. It's like, yeah, but can you master your own behavior?
Yeah.
Like, can you make sure that you're doing the right things that keep you functioning at the highest level? if you can't do those things, maybe, just maybe, you should consider that deserves some of your attention, because that's going to be the thing that leverages your legacy, right? The type of person that you show up as. And if you aren't becoming that type of guy, man, like, I don't know what you're doing.
How important is it for you to find a mentor? Because I think the only way that you avoid some difficult, people say, what's the best mentor, the best mentorship out there? And it's this guy named experience, right? That's tough, but you can avoid some of those battles by learning from others who can communicate it really well, 'cause they went through the mud. Now, I believe, now tell me if I'm wrong, on your Facebook, it literally says like a bachelor's degree from the School of Hard Knocks, yep, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, did you lack a true mentor and you just had to find, like, I read an article last night, just Googling your name, just, you know, sometimes it's fun to just Google people, yeah, that you came to a point in your life where it was feed my daughter or starve. Yeah. I saw that quote somewhere, yeah, that, yeah, like, to me, like, did you just have to grind and figure it out yourself? And now your ability to give back.
Yeah.
Like, see, how important is for us, me as a young coach, to seek out mentors to be able to learn?
Yeah. One, I've always said, like, my plan B is to make plan A work. And that meant I had to get really clear on what plan A was, mm-hmm, right? And what it was going to take. I think using mentors and coaches and things of that nature are incredibly important in that process. I am standing on the shoulders of giants. The guys that I talk to and that I communicate with in this industry are guys that I looked up to first decade of my career.
Right.
And I had a lot of insecurities. You see, when you see my schooling, it's School of Hard Knocks, because I became a father at 16 years old. I was on my own shortly thereafter that. I arrogantly started a business at 20. And here we are 21, 22 years later. I've kind of figured some things out. But that left me with, I don't know if I call it insecurity. Yeah, insecurity, self-doubt. Mm-hmm. So by me building relationships, like I would attribute my biggest mentor to be Joe Ken. Mm-hmm. Joe has treated me, you know, like a son, like somebody on his coaching tree. He has been there. Anytime I have needed him, and he has not only helped me have a better understanding of the principles of, you know, all things associated with strength and conditioning, but he also gave me this like validation that mentors at times can give you, mm-hmm, where he was just like, no, like you do understand this stuff. You really do get it. And, there are a lot of people that can't do what you've done.
Right.
You know, and that has been huge for me. I needed that, man. Like, I would love to say that, you know, I didn't need somebody to put a battery in my back, but man, it's been incredibly valuable. And then,
yeah,
you know, other guys in this industry that I'm really close with, it's been huge for me, man, just to be able to reach out to them and clarify certain concepts. Guys like Mike Robertson, Pat Davidson, and I could name drop a bunch of others, but
Pat Davidson, the guy that uses Instagram like Twitter.
That's pretty good. I never heard that's pretty good.
It's just pictures of words, but it's, yeah, powerful.
That's it. You, yeah, know, and he's brilliant. Like, I remember, yes, sitting next to him at a physical prep conference one year, and I asked him a very stupid question, or I thought it was stupid at that point. I just remember how, like, he was like, nah, man, that's not a stupid question. And he was so humble, like, how he addressed it. And, man, that matters, dude. It matters. So I think we all need coaches. We all need mentors. We need people that have been where we want to go. We need people to validate us, no matter what the self-help gurus say.
Right.
We need that, man. It's crucial.
Yeah. Human behavior, I'm learning, is more about interdependency.
Yes.
Where you need each other. Like, we have to lean on each other. You know,
indeed,
that's a principle you can take into your professional life, your marriage, your friendships, whatever it is. You, well, know, like,
even on that note, I don't mean to interrupt you,
but no,
even on
you're
that
good. Note,
there's an interdependence upon all those areas of life that we talked about.
Right.
Right. Your family, your career, your personal health, like your spirituality, like all those things
not
matter. They're, yeah, not separate. They're one. So when one of those areas is lacking, it's affecting every other area. And that's why it's important to bring them all up, as opposed to just focusing on your zone of genius. What might be bringing the juice, programming, like whatever makes you feel great. We like to live in our strengths, right?
Right.
But if some of these other areas you aren't addressing, it's incredibly important to do that.
Yeah. And that's one hard lesson I had to learn as a leader of a family and just a leader of a team. My decisions affect way more people than I even know.
Like, sure,
every move I make, if it's not intentional or calculated, I may accidentally cause damage in an area I didn't even know was happening.
Yeah.
And I need to realize that. And that's why a lot of people say, one of my coolest quotes I have is from my hitting coach in high school. He His name's Doc Brooks, and he played high-level baseball, but he always used to tell me, drink ice water and walk slow.
Huh.
Like, move slowly, move quietly, think, breathe, slow down, don't make decisions quick. You know, think about what you're doing before you act. And I didn't understand that as a 16, 17, 18-year-old. Right. I had no idea. I was like, oh, it's a cool saying. It's a hashtag. You know, that's when hashtags started to come out and everything. But now, to this day, as a grown man, I'm like, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's powerful. You know, about how to make decisions and understand. Just understand that, one, you got to make tough decisions. And sometimes you know you have to make a decision that's going to affect other. And you're just going to have to live with that.
Yeah, man.
Because there's no such thing as like 100% ROI, and it's never going to affect, because you have to choose. That's one thing I'm learning now, is that you got to pick and choose your time.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever you left off, it's going to be there when you come back. Now just pick and dive. You know, you mentioned deep work quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
About blocking off and going deep on something intentionally.
Yeah.
And then stepping away from it. You know, instead of like, because I find myself doing a lot of stuff on a surface level, and I go, God, I didn't get anything done.
Yes.
You know, like that's, and that's also comes back to how we're intentional in our relationships. And I bring this full circle back to, like, you high school coaches that you want to connect with your kids. That boost of battery pack charge, or you let a kid know, like, dude, you can do this, man. Like, I'm not, like, don't be afraid to gas your kids up.
That's right.
You know, coach your kids hard, but dude, love them harder. You know, like, because here's what's crazy in high school, and you probably see it in your building. That one comment or that one look in the mirror, that bicep starts to flex, and you see a little, it's over.
Go time.
They're bit. Yeah. They're coming. You know, I got kids that are begging to, like, coach. What's the next best arm pump, man? You gotta show me how to do it. It's funny how they just fall in love in those processes. And then us as mentors, being able to provide that for these kids and help guide that energy is so huge. And at the same time, being able to receive that from a mentor ourselves. So I find it important to always try to find somebody that can mentor you and you can learn from, and somebody you can help mentor.
I totally agree. And I just want to tag on to one thing that you said that I think is important. There's something called dynamic complexity. And even your, like you said, there's no guarantee of a 100% ROI.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your best intentions will fall short. And I'll give you the example, because I explained this to somebody the other day in the context of me and my daughter. Because, you know, like, I chose to keep my daughter virtual. I have a 6-year-old daughter too.
Right.
And I have a 6-year-old granddaughter. So, yeah. But anyway, so
life.
My 6-year-old's with me all day, every day, because I have the freedom to kind of have her hang with me and, you know, do all that.
Mm-hmm.
So she watches how I eat. She watches how I train. She watches how I prioritize sleep, right? Now, you would think that could yield great things. And it's my hope that it will. But dynamic complexity says it could also end up in an eating disorder. It could also end up in her overvaluing exercise.
Right.
And I think it's important to address those things. But I think it's important to know that and know the opposite. That sometimes you digging into a kid and ripping him is going to be the best thing for that kid. It's going to help solidify him as somebody who can handle that stuff. And I think in a world now where we're running away from physical culture, personal responsibility, it's important that we do that. We need to love these kids up, but we still need to be hard on them too.
Right.
And there's a lot of noise right now telling us all that we can't be hard on kids.
Yes.
And
yes.
And this audience probably is not that way. You know what I mean? If I had to bet, but there's probably some guys, because it's in my head. Am I too hard on that kid? But remember, dynamic complexity, being hard on him in the moment could be the best thing that happened to him later on in life.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree that, you know, there's a lot of things you don't, I keep going back to, like, if we're training kids don't get it. They don't know. But establishing relationships and still being tough on them in a way that's constructive. Because here's the deal. Like, this is the approach I take. I'm going to coach the crap out of you, because a standard has been clearly preached and it's in there. You know the standard. You fell short. I'm letting you know that.
Yep.
Now let's discuss it. Now let's check me first. Did I not communicate that well? Did you understand that?
Yep.
Are you telling me the truth?
Yeah.
Okay. You fell short. Big deal. We got another opportunity coming up. Let's go.
That's right.
I'm not going to push you to the side and go, you're less. Your decisions don't define you. You're on a journey. You jacked up. You screwed up that play, dude. Like, you went lazy. You cost us.
Yep.
But you have an opportunity next.
Own it.
Yes.
Fix it.
Yes.
Move on.
And coaches need to hear that.
Yeah.
I need to hear that. You need to hear that.
Sure.
That when take a chance on what you believe in, mm-hmm. run it, and then own the consequence, good or bad.
Yep.
And go from there.
1,000,000%.
You know, that's we could take that model right there and be pretty successful in many things.
Indeed.
I think.
I agree.
And I know I've got a lot of dudes out there that are probably going to listen to this, especially guys that have been coaching for 20 years and go, man, this guy's 27 years old. Think he's spitting. I mean, I believe in what I believe, and yeah. I try to put myself in front of guys like you
yeah.
and other coaches that have been there and try to just continue to grow. Because, like, I don't believe that just because I'm young that I can't be effective quickly. But I also know that because I'm young, I got a long freaking way to go. You know, like, yeah. I haven't experienced things in life that a lot of other people have, and I got to learn. And just because you're young, I got a lot of young coaches that are getting started that follow me, and they say that I inspire them or whatever yeah. based off putting my voice out there, that stand your ground, but make sure you shelf that ego at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's important, though. I think guys like you need to be communicating. I think age is kind of a ridiculous metric for us to care so much about. There are a lot of young guys that I learn from all the time, and I got no issue with it.
Right.
So that's that ego thing. It's an important thing to keep in check, man.
Right. So, man, I tell you what, Andy and I could sit here and riff for 3 hours if we really wanted to.
For sure.
But I know I'm just grateful that you took some time out of your day. I know it's very calculated. You're running multiple different things. Andy's got a wealth of knowledge. Don't be afraid to reach out. He's one of the most humble guys I've ever met, and one of the most knowledgeable guys I've ever met. So if you want to ask more about, say you're a private sector coach, or he's got a lot of resources out there that can really help you. And one of the ones I want to push here is his Facebook group called Small Giants. And you can talk a little more about that, but I joined it simply from the fact that, yeah, I sell a couple products myself. I'm trying to help people, but just listening to people you bring on, you interview, the topics you talk about, the strategies you use in your business and the people you mentor, man, it's free.
Yeah.
Come join, come request, but you better answer the questions or you're getting kicked
yeah,
out.
Yeah, you do not get accepted if you don't answer the questions.
Yep.
But every week I go live with experts and we kind of riff on a host of different subjects. I've had a lot of great strength coaches, business owners on there, names that you guys would all recognize, or most of them that you would recognize. I feel like this is kind of the next stage of my career is giving back. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I want to plant my flag on is teaching people how to run a really good business, and one that helps them create the lifestyle and profit that's important to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't just want to work with private market coaches. Like, I want to communicate with high school coaches, college coaches, professional. And I communicate with them because, you know, at some point in time you may consider that there's another environment that makes sense for you. And if you've worked in the silos of high school, college, or strength and conditioning, I'm not so sure it prepares you for entrepreneurship. And I'd love to be able to help guys bridge that gap. And that's what the Small Giants group is about. And the Small Giant concept comes from a great book called Small Giants that studied these very small companies that valued being excellent and great at things over profit. And that's kind of the model that we have here. We want to be great at what we do. But I also kind of spun that to where, like, you want to run a highly profitable business that pays people really well with a high level of expertise. And that's not the common thing in our throw up a 30,000 square foot building with 60 yards of turf mm-hmm. and 200 grand worth of equipment, and then pay trainers $10 an hour and they just run glorified speed sessions, right? So
right.
I'm trying to help people shift and understand how they can run a model that's integrity based and that takes care of them and their families.
Awesome. Well, man, I'm so happy you came on. Appreciate you taking time. And in the show notes, I'll link some of Andy's media. You can follow him on IG. I believe it's Andy McCloy.
Andy McCloy _BCI.
Got it. So follow him on Instagram. He's pretty active on there, and on Facebook. If you want to join that group, it's free. I'm telling you, I don't care what coach you are. I personally would join it just because it's free. I read the feed all the time, and I don't participate as much, and sure. I know you're trying to get more engagement on that for guys that are really running their business. But, man, I'm active. I'm listening. I'm reading. There's a lot of value there from a guy that's done it a lot of different ways and is being really successful. So, well, Andy, we're going to hop off here. And
yeah, brother.
And thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. Thank you very much.